Hello, everyone. Welcome back to For the Future, our monthly series highlighting women and diversity in motorsport. Today, we have two extremely exciting guests to discuss the incredible More Than Equal initiative, which is on a mission to find and develop the first female Formula One world champion. So we have Tom Stanton, head of driver development, who has an impressive background across a whole variety of sports disciplines. So we'll get into that. And Kate Beaven, board member and strategic advisor, who spent 18 years at Formula One as their former global director of hospitality. So a lot to talk about here. We cannot wait to jump in. So to set the stage, why don't you all just tell us briefly in your words what More Than Equal does and a little bit about your roles and where they come in.
More Than Equal was, yes, you don't need to invite me twice to speak. More Than Equal was set up, as some people might know, by, ironically, two guys, David Coulthard, ex-F1 driver, who has always had a very personal interest in addressing the issue that there have been no women racing competitively in Formula One for nearly half a century. That matters to him. And Carol Komarek, who is a philanthropist, a European successful entrepreneur and a philanthropist, who also feels that there is a glaring gap here. How can you say that you have a truly world championship sport that is gender neutral when you haven't had any women anywhere near it for nearly 50 years? So both of them truly believe that this needs is a problem that needs solving. And that's all it is. It's a problem that needs solving. There is no inherent reason why women are not competing head-to-head on the grid in Formula One. And that's what More Than Equal was set up to put right. And it was set up from the beginning to be a systemic and methodical approach to this. So, you know, the interesting thing is not that there are no women in Formula One for 50 years. The interesting thing is, why have there been no women competing in Formula One for nearly 50 years? And that's what More Than Equal seeks to address through an evidence-based and data-led approach. We are, if you like, the boring kids in the room. We are there out there doing the research, trying to fix the problem. You know, there's one thing that's kept me in Formula One for nearly 25 years, and that is it's full of smart people. And I love working with really, really smart people. And Formula One is a culture of problem solving at speed. It's a culture of innovation. And I think that if you apply that to this issue, it can and will be solved. So that's a very broad overview of what More Than Equal is and how it's setting about tackling this.
Yeah, well, calling yourselves the boring kids in the room does not give you enough credit, but appreciate that beautiful overview. Tom, I want to give you a chance to jump in on your role and how you see the organization as well.
Yeah, so I was going to use the term super nerds. So I'm probably not far off what Kate's described as, which probably says more about how we see ourselves as well. I've been in sport for 20 years now, and I'm obsessed with performance and the development of performance. And this is what I see More Than Equal as, in terms of an opportunity to develop something that's never happened before. There are very few times in sport nowadays where something is being done for the first time. And this is an opportunity to be a true pioneer in a field, taking a group of female drivers and honing them, shaping them, developing them, pushing, pulling them to the point where you can get them to the pinnacle. And that, for me, really encapsulates what I think More Than Equal is sets out to do, which is to do it differently, but also to do it in a really special way. And none more so since we've just had our inaugural camp, the first time that we've pulled together our six drivers to understand the reality of our starting point. And it's a fascinating time to be part of the sport, because wherever you look, the question now is not if, but when. And also the challenge now is real in terms of people, whether they think it or not, knowing that they have to have a greater level of female representation within the sport. You know, it's worth remembering that even in the FIA rules, it still refers to he and him.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to kind of reset the standards and expectations of how this sport's going to kind of develop and live and breathe.
Yeah, I love the way you've both framed that. And it's so incredibly important. And I can't wait to dive into the details around the drivers and everything. But let's talk a little bit about the strategy at More Than Equal. So you're structured sort of around four key pillars or elements: uncovering the problems, defining solutions, re-engineering how you actually scout talent, building the world-class female driver program, and then connecting talent once you have that with the right opportunities, which is a huge part of the puzzle. So we want to walk through these, maybe starting with uncovering the problems, because that's obviously the first place you start usually when trying to solve something. Research is such a big part of that. And in 2023, as we've alluded to, you all published a first of its kind report called Inside Track that identifies the barriers facing women in motorsport and starts to lay out some solutions. So why is research like that so important? How does it inform your day-to-day roles and how you start to tackle some of these things?
Research was completely fundamental from day one of this project. And the reason for that is that this isn't a simple problem. It is loaded with culture and prejudice and opinion and myths. And what we wanted to do was to bust through that. So, you know, if I had walked around Formula One, you know, a few years ago, maybe even now, and asked 10 people why they think, and that's 10 people working in the sport, why they think there is and has not been a woman near competitive in Formula One for so long, why do they think that is? I think, and I know because I did this, that you'd have had almost 10 different answers to that.
Yeah.
And that's not a good starting point for opinion is not necessarily a good starting point for solving a problem. So you have to be a little bit more methodical than that. You have to try and break down what looks like a big and complex problem into pieces and chunks of information and insights and data that you can action. And you hope that by putting that data together into actionable points, you can then create a system that changes rather than just throwing mud at the wall and seeing what sticks, rather than thinking something might be a good idea, you know, and seeing if it works. So data for us and research was critical from the very, very beginning. And what shocked us when we started this was how little data there was out there. What there was a lot of opinion, but there was very little data out there. And if you had gone to any other sport in the world right now, I'm guessing, and you asked them how many women are competing in your sport, their press office would get back to you within 5 minutes with how many there are and where they are, because that's the only way they can tell the story of growth and how the female side of any game is growing. Right. So they're using it for very positive reasons, but at least they have the data that just doesn't exist in motorsport. Motorsport is much more fragmented because it's a global sport, because it has different federations in different countries. But there is no data. So we had to start by trying to compile our own data, our own basic numbers on this. Because surely you cannot begin to tell a story of how we together are going to grow the participation of women in motorsport without knowing what your baseline number is. So let's start with that, shall we? You know, this is all really basic stuff, but it needs to be done. So we did. We spent a lot of time and did a very comprehensive piece of research that was both qualitative and quantitative. So we did a fan survey. Why did we survey fans? Because we wanted to interrogate whether there are myths out there and opinions that might themselves be barriers to girls even going karting at the age of eight. If there are a lot of myths out there that women can't drive because they're not strong enough, or women can't do this because they're not that, then we needed to know that. We need to know whether there were attitudes and beliefs out there that might themselves form barriers. So we surveyed the audience. We got some really interesting results from that we didn't expect, by the way. But if you read it, I'm just giving a teaser there. It's only 60 pages. It's really good. Summer holidays coming, so beach reading. it's got pictures and everything. So we did qualitative and quantitative research to just try and point us in the right direction. Don't forget, we're spending other people's money to fix this problem. We are not for profit. We are funded by our founders and we are spending their money. And it's incumbent upon us, I think, to spend their money wisely. So so that's, you know, that was the research we did. It was in four parts. We did executive interviews with experts from the industry. Why? To give us insights, genuine and real structured insights into what they saw the barriers were to women entering and progressing in motorsport. We did a fan survey for the reasons that I've just set out. We did a data scrape. Why? Because there wasn't any out there. So we had to go and work with some specialists like Rob Smedley, you know, a legendary engineer in Formula One, to go and do some data research. Thankfully, there's a lot of good data engineers in Formula One, so it doesn't take too long to find somebody to help you do that. And we did some desktop research looking at other sports as well, looking at other sports science and how they've approached the problem. Because here's the thing, you know, a lot of young female talented racers are, and Tom will develop this theme with me because he knows what he's talking about and I don't. And that's why we hired him. A lot of young talented racers out there at the age of, you imagine if you're a girl at the age of 13 or 14, they go into the motorsport world. One of the first barriers they face is that there's no training for them. Yeah. They can find a trainer all day long who knows how to develop a young male racer, but there is literally nothing out there on the market that is out there designed for girls, young female racing talent. And that just doesn't make sense, because we all know, you look at every other Olympic sport, you know, and Tom will tell you this, you don't train a young aspiring female cyclist in exactly the same training regime and development regime that you train a male. Every other sport has figured this out, right? And now I think it's time for motorsport to figure that out and say it is not because women can't succeed in motorsport, it's that they're not being given the tools to do so.
That is fascinating. Yeah, Tom, I would love to hear from you sort of any myths that you learned from this research that's definitely helped inform how you're going to develop these drivers.
Yeah, so I guess the reason we wanted to do a bit of a landscape trace, if you like, was literally because we're looking for needles in haystacks. And so we wanted to understand where these drivers were, what they were doing, and probably equally as importantly, how long they've been doing it. So we had a good stab at that. We understood that, roughly speaking, that less than 10% of the active population was female, which is amazing when you think about other sports that are reaching up to almost kind of 40 and 50%, 50-50. One of the most interesting kind of things that we drew is the longevity of career, the difference. So anywhere between 1 to 5 years for a female driver versus 12 years on average for a male driver. And I guess a lot of that comes from this idea that once you're in the sport, it's a sport for life. You can go from karting to cars, to sports cars, to open wheel, to rallying and anything else. And that tends to be that transient nature of a driver's development. Boys are doing that more than girls. And why? Now, they face the same challenges, of course, whether that's the financial barriers, whether that's the technical barriers, whether the fact that the pyramid is incredibly sharp at the top. There are so few trying to do it at the very top. And unlike most other sports, you know, the top of the tree is 20 drivers. You know, 99.99% need not apply. So if that's top 20 and we're looking at a population of less than 10% that then needs to make it into that 0.0001%, we know that the challenge is looking for the eye of a needle in a haystack. And that's why we wanted to know where people were. It proved to be a really fascinating process, because we unearthed pockets of data that with more research will probably show us that there are key people out there that are supporting this. But quite often it's a very, very well-motivated set of parents and caregivers and others who are helping these girls to push through those barriers. The other thing that's been fascinating is understanding their kind of social barriers. So their perception of how they are received, whether that's in the paddock, whether that's in the pit, or whether that's out on the track. And certainly understanding from the girls the perceptions of, at times, we don't want you to be there. And now that's not my feedback. That's our girls on program and others through the interviews. That for me is a real carrying call that we need to do something different. Like, it should be open to all. And once you put that helmet on, who knows whether you're a boy or a girl, and it shouldn't matter either. And so that for me, the data and the research enabled us to paint a really good base landscape to then draw our own things upon. But without that, we've got no starting point. And we also don't know the scale of the problem.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion, living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that is with Babbel. If I had one wish, it would be to speak every language, but sadly, I've given up hope on that and have turned my full focus to learning French. Ever since my family lived in Paris, I've been on a French learning journey, taking weekly classes, doing tutoring twice a week, listening to French podcasts daily. But the only consistent way I've been able to feel immersed and feel like I'm actually improving each day is with Babbel. It is so easy to integrate into my daily routine, learn how to order food, ask for directions, speak to merchants. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent, which has been a godsend for me in French. It's developed by over 200 expert linguists, and one study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. To join millions of Babbel language learners across all age groups, here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/FTG. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/FTG, spelled BABBEL.com/FTG. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Women's health is so important, and balanced hormones are key to that. We've been loving Hormone Harmony, an all-in-one hormonal balancing solution for women of all ages from Happy Mammoth. Hormone Harmony contains adaptogens, which are science-backed herbal extracts that help your body adapt to stressors like hormonal changes and all the things that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Happy Mammoth as a company is so incredible. It's committed to making women's lives easier, and they actually have a whole range of products to help that. Another one that we've been loving is Estro Control, which you take to help support and balance you throughout your entire cycle, and it really helps ease all of those PMS symptoms. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off of your order at happymammoth.com with code F1RTheGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com, and use code F1RTheGirls for 15% off today. Spring is over, and it's not too late to get yourself an iconic pair of Tecovas cowboy boots before the summer. They are the coolest addition to any outfit and add such a fun flair to literally anything that you're wearing. And with every pair of Tecovas boots, you can expect handmade quality, first wear comfort, which means that you don't have to break them in. You can just wear them right away. It's truly amazing. And of course, the timeless Western style that is so unique to Tecovas. The boots are made from premium bovine and exotic leathers and can truly last you your entire lifetime. So head on over to your local store. It's the best way to shop. Grab a cold one, get fitted by a pro, and shop all of the latest styles. They also offer custom branding and leather stamping if you want to personalize your boots or any of their other leather goods. Tecovas also has beautiful classic straw hats and a gorgeous lineup of rugged and full grain leather bags. And if you can't make it to a store, don't worry, you can shop online. Just visit tecovas.com. That's TECOVAS.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Don't go gently, y'all.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And when you talk about like finding a needle in the haystack, it is about finding this next generation of talent. So this leads us to our second sort of strategic initiative point for More Than Equal, which is scouting female talent and rethinking how you're scouting them. So you just announced your six drivers, which is so incredible. They kind of have very diverse backgrounds, come from all over, but how did you scout them this time, and how is that different than what, I mean, has been done historically, knowing that there hasn't been too much done?
Yeah, it's a great question. I guess rather than run as a comparison, I'll explain what we did. Because we have the benefit of is doing something different, very different this time, and also acknowledging that because we're not in the normal open system, is we're not purely going to just rely upon performative results and those kind of things to take us to the line. We knew we wanted to know where they were for a start. So we did a global data search. And as Kate has mentioned, Rob Smedley helped with that, pulling together data from key areas around the world that we could pull results in. Not an easy process when, if anyone's ever looked at a results sheet, actually it just gives you name, flag, and some results. It doesn't tell you whether they are boys or girls. It doesn't tell you actually their date of birth. So a lot of things we've had to do some and I say we, Rob has had to do some rather clever things to try and get that data into a position where we could utilize it. Alongside that, we also did an application. And the reason we did an application to our program is I'm a very firm believer that I want people to actually lean in to be part of something. It's dead easy to go scouting and offer, but actually it's more important that someone actually spend some time considering why they would want to do this. And the application, though quite hefty in its completion, went through not just the who are you and where you live and what you're doing, but also how much are you driving? How much are you doing other sports? How long have you done other sports? How long have you driven? Who else helps you and why do they help you? And also, why do you want to do it? And these kind of secondary, deeper questions enable us to form a third axis on our kind of axis of interest of these drivers. And it enables us to have a deeper look at who they were. And that then enabled, when we started to filter down into our kind of final selection for interview, it enabled us to at times have very, very difficult conversations because of the depth of knowledge that we've got. I think I'm a bit of a nerd with a spreadsheet, or at least I'm told pretty much every day by people I work with. But the data that we accumulated was vast, but also very meaningful. And of course, we want to use that for further research as well, because we want to not just help the six girls that are on program and the others that are in our kind of subsidiary programs, but the global female driving community. So the more data, more power. And so we're trying to leverage as much as we can to change the dial a bit. You know, the more girls in the sport means more chance that we're going to get one to the top, of course.
But I think the fundamental difference, Tom, here is that we're not scouting based on results. The traditional way to scout talent, most of the driving academies, the F1 team academies, will scout for talent based on results in junior series, right? We're not doing that. We are not scouting for talent based on results. What we're looking for is potential. And that makes it a lot harder, right? If we were just scouting for results, we wouldn't build an algorithm. It would just be a database of results, right? You go to the top of that and you'd say, come and join our program. We're doing something completely different. We're trying to spot potential and spot it early, which makes trying to, and you know, this is a system that, wonderful thing about this is that we've started it, but it's only going to iterate and it's only going to get better. So the more data we can feed into this, you know, sort of magical algorithm, which is a combination of hard data and all of the soft elements that you have to try and quantify that Tom's talking about, the more you can build a profile of what potential looks like, not what results look like. And I think that that's why our approach is different. And time will tell whether it will work or not, but we think it's a much better way of finding talent, scouting talent early, and then intervening early and developing that talent from the earliest stages.
Yeah. So when we think about that development piece, once you get the right people and the right potential in the door, how are you building this world-class program? You know, I think one thing that's cool about More Than Equal is it's not just about developing drivers on track, but it aims to sort of give them everything they need to grow and develop outside the car as well. And it's quite similar to the approach in developing Olympic athletes. Tom, I know you have experience working in that sphere. So what sorts of things are you thinking about when it comes to the opportunities for these young women and their development? And how are you thinking about the sort of holistic approach to that?
Yeah, it's a really great question. So in developing our program, the coaches and I and other people that are kind of forming the program, we consider three people at any one time. So we're looking at the performer, the driver, we're looking at the athlete, and then we're looking at the person. And if you think back to previous systems, even 20 years ago, Olympic systems, is they probably still just purely concentrated on the performer. You know, if you're an athlete, you're an athlete, you know. And that was the technical aspect. Your athletics probably came as a subsidiary, because actually if you were a track and field athlete, you were probably doing that as well. But very rarely did they really consider the person in that as well. Mm-hmm. And not just from a humanistic point of view, but also in terms of a motivational point of view, an experiential point of view, a values and beliefs point of view. And so what we've done is we've tried to wrap around a system that starts to address all of those three people at any one time. Now, don't get me wrong, it's pretty difficult to do all three at once. But actually, if you consider the curriculum that you're designing and the interventions and experiences that you're going to provide, you can very quickly build different things in at very key times that actually hit more than one person. And that's been a real kind of watchword of us, is how are we going to get a different outcome from what we're doing? So to give you an example, is that the technical work that we've just recently been doing on the camp, we've spent a lot more time evaluating the actual session itself with the drivers and pushing them quite hard to reflect on their own performance in a sensibly critical way. So we want them to be able to learn and understand and evaluate their performance, but we also want them to understand that it's just one point in time. And actually what we're going to do is lots of little changes will make a big change over time. And that's a big shift for a 13, 14 year old driver. Yeah. I mean, even within their academic world, their real life, if you like, is they're still just going through that age of school where academically they're provided a lot of scaffolding as they're learning. And so we are having to mimic schooling style of kind of information delivery to make sure we're giving it in the right way. And that's probably the secondary thing, is we want it to be age and stage appropriate, as well as gender appropriate. And that's those three, not necessarily competing aims, but they take quite a lot to consider. Because actually the way in which you talk to a 13-year-old about performance of a skill is different to a 14-year-old. It's amazing how people learn. If you ever want to understand how to really learn something, go and find a 2-year-old and just get them to do something for the first time and watch them just keep on going until they achieve it. And that's what we are trying to do, is trying to understand what is the framework that we put something in that they can learn from and iterate as they go. And Kate uses the word iterate a lot as well, because I think that's what we think about a lot, is how is it going to be a little bit better each time? And then the stage component actually is very much down to their speed of movement through the system. Everyone is different. And a 12-year-old entering the sport is going to be very different to a 14-year-old entering the sport. So considering that in how we support their development, especially when we're in a mixed age ability class, if you like, takes some work. Fortunately, we've got great instructors, we've got great coaches, and we're able to kind of create these environments where you have those kind of boundaries of capability that moves everybody along. One of the most, if not the most brilliant thing that we observed during the camp that we had last week was the fact that straight away they were helping each other out. And I will admit that I couldn't in a month of Sundays set that up. Like that only comes from having a group of girls who within 5 minutes had a relationship with one another. And it made us smile on the first day when we were just kind of settling people in, is they just coalesced on one table together and ignored all their parents and us largely. And that was a great moment for me, because it was almost, that's it. We've done it. We've cracked it. And that moment, seeing six girls talking to each other and kind of supporting each other out of each task, that was the moment where we thought, okay, this is really going to happen.
Yeah, that community and camaraderie is a big part of development and making that a real supportive opportunity for young girls.
I think that comes down to our fourth pillar, Tiggy, because, you know, we talk about, connecting talent with opportunities. That's not just, let's go find some sponsors for them, which of course forms a crucial part of it. You know, financing in motorsport is a huge factor in success. There is nobody can deny that. And it's a very sad fact that that's true. So of course, we will attempt to make those connections for the girls. But most importantly, when you're looking at female representation on average of 10%, and all of the qualitative interviews we did showed us, it's very isolating being a young girl trying to make it in motorsport, right? And they told a story. There's often a target on their back when they go racing. They're often not made to feel particularly welcome when they do go racing. They are definitely not made to feel welcome when they start winning. So having more than equal, be able to provide that kind of community and support for young female talent going through the sport, we think will make a big difference for them, for their supporters, for their parents behind them. And I think that's one of those things, it's one of my favorite quotes. Tom will have heard this because I go on about it, but not that I read management books, but Peter Drucker said, what did he say? He said, culture eats strategy for breakfast. Right. So whatever strategies you have for fixing this problem, and we're implementing a lot of those strategies and we're strategizing it. It is also the culture. It's also the culture of motorsport that needs to change. And that's some of the tasks that we're taking on in a way in that fourth pillar, is creating a supportive community for young racing female talent, so they don't feel isolated and pushed out of the sport and don't stay only for 5 years instead of staying for 12.
Kate, I love that you mentioned culture, because I think given your, you know, long background at Formula One, you understand just how nuanced that culture can be and sort of like the outside perceptions and then also how it functions internally. And, you know, that in and of itself is going to pose a certain challenge to getting a woman in the sport. So I'd love to hear sort of from your perspective how you're thinking about that and how you can make those connections to make the leap from, you know, More Than Equal through the junior series and things like that directly to Formula One, make it seem possible.
Well, you know, yeah, I have been in the sport a long time, and I wouldn't have been in the sport a long time if it was simply populated by a bunch of misogynistic men. You know, I kind of wouldn't have hung around that long, right? So if you go and ask any of the team principals, would they hire, you know, a female driver? They'll say yes in a heartbeat. If they're fast, yes in a heartbeat. You know, if you said, would you hire a female CEO, you know, for the team? Yeah, if they're good enough, yep, in a heartbeat. But that dodges the issue. It's not a question of would you hire, it's why aren't you? And how are you going to? And what's stopping you from? And why isn't the talent there applying? You know, so it's really, I think that hopefully the culture can change a bit quicker than it has changed over the 20 years I've been there. But it is changing. You look at, certainly on the, bizarrely, on the technical side, you look at, the battle you have now between Red Bull and Mercedes on track is effectively a battle between two female race strategists, right? Mm. Who both got brains the size of planets and who are making decisions that are going to win or lose races. So next time, you know, forget the driver. He's just plonked in the car and he's just steering the car, right? Why concentrate on the driver? Who are the people really moving the chess pieces in that race? It is two really, really smart women. So, you know, and I think that's part of the issue. The issue is nobody frames it like that. Nobody talks about that. They're not seen on any of the, they're not seen anywhere. They're not interviewed. They're not, because they're not drivers, you know, they're not on the Netflix. There's just a little bit of a lack of visibility on the important roles that women have and do play in motorsport. And that just feeds into this narrative that it's very male, which it is predominantly, but it's not all there. It's not all male. It's not all misogynistic. There is a role for, you know, there is scope for huge change, and it is happening. We just need to make it happen faster. And that's the culture piece, I think.
I love that. That was so beautifully put. And yeah, moving away from the hypothetical, it's almost like we're asking the wrong questions. The hypothetical, would you do this? But it's, how are you going to do this? How do we actually action this? So I think that's so well said. And I'm going to start using the culture eats strategy for breakfast quote in my life. So to end on hopefully a positive and optimistic note, as you look out over the next several years, what makes you optimistic about women in motorsport?
I guess from my point of view, and again, fresh from quite an intense camp, it's just the talent that is there when you unearth it and putting it into a performance bubble, which is what we're doing. It feeds off each other. So the sum of its parts is far greater than the individual. Seeing them being able to just learn almost real time and put it into practice says to me that it's not a question of if we're going to get one to Formula One as a system, but when. And that makes me really excited. The secondary, again, rather nerdy part is just how much opportunity we've got to better understand female motor racing drivers. Mm. You know, less than 7% of research globally is done on female athletes. Well, we can start to really push that and increase that number in this sport and more broadly. And we want to work with people to do that. But that's really exciting to me, because there are certain things which are specific to females and to female drivers. And they will be ands in most teams, and this. That becomes the forefront of what we do, and that's what becomes really, really exciting and interesting, because we can make big differences, not just to our sport, therefore, but to other sports as well.
For me, it's the fact that Tom thinks that. That gives me optimism and hope. Why? Because he comes from outside. He comes from a world of other Olympic sports, as do actually a lot of the people we put together in More Than Equal come with outside expertise. You know, Ali Donnelly, our CEO, has come from Sport England, which is heavily involved in funding sport in the UK. We've got, you know, Karen Webb-Moss, who's come from the Olympic movement. We've got people who come from the outside. So to hear Tom, who's been pivotal in the success of elite cycling in the UK to medal status at the Olympics, to hear his view that what we're doing is the right thing and that it can be done, that to me is what gives me optimism. Because, of course, just saying you want it to happen doesn't mean it is going to happen. Come on, you know, let's grow up a bit and move on from that one, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's what gives me optimism. If we have that kind of validation, then I know we can do it.
Well, I'm going to speak for Tiggy here and saying hearing both of you talk about this gives us both an incredible amount of optimism. So hopefully everyone listening is smiling as widely as we are, because truly this has been such an amazing conversation, and we are so excited to see what More Than Equal is going to continue to do, because it just seems like all the pieces are there and they're all the right ones. So this has been incredibly illuminating, such a fun conversation. And we thank you guys so much.
Can we just fill your, whenever you need a nerdy slot, that you can just ask us in.
Yeah, let's do like a recurring monthly nerdy slot and we can just keep it going.
We always need a nerdy slot. Tessa and I are quite big nerds ourselves. So
fantastic.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you very much for having us.